Are you listening? Damn.
On this episode of the Endurance Hour podcast, we talk about running workouts and how long you should run before your full distance Ironman marathon, cycling cadence, what is the ideal number to feel most comfortable, also swim interval times, how to know how long to rest between your intervals, and we finish off with cutoff times at a 70.3 or Ironman. Can you make it at a casual pace? All right, our first question is from Wendy to Wendy. It says here, I had a 1 hour run today and a 1 hour run for tomorrow, but I had to cut my first run short to 40 minutes instead of the full 60. Should I add 20 minutes to my run tomorrow and make it an hour and 20 versus the hour scheduled to begin with, Wendy?
I always answer every question with, it just depends. So the short answer is, of course, you can do it. Just know that it's going to be a different stimulus if you end up running 40 minutes today and an hour and 20 minutes tomorrow. And so when I'm looking at those two different workouts, 2 1-hour workouts or 40-minute workout and an hour and 20-minute workout, they're very different in my mind. To me, the 40-minute workout is a shorter, maybe easier workout, and the hour and 20-minute workout could be the longest run of the week for her. And it also depends on what type of intensity these hour sessions. I don't know what the intention of the hour today and the hour tomorrow was. So it's just definitely a different training stimulus, depending on the intensity and the level of athlete she is, as well as your body's different from today than it will be tomorrow. Are you going to do one workout in the evening and the other workout in the morning? So you're kind of doing back-to-back workouts with maybe less than 12 hours apart. You're going to be under a different, glycogen load, depending on how much energy you have for that workout, whether it's the glycogen in your muscles or how you're fueling your workout for the next day. And so there's just, I think athletes maybe don't realize it, especially if they're a beginner, how vastly different 2 1-hour runs are, 1 hour the next day, as well as a 40-minute run and an hour 20-minute run. So yes, you can do it, but just know it's a different workout stimuli.
Yeah, I need more information about this as well. Are those 1 hour runs the same, or is one more of a, your build run, another one is more some intervals within it? If there are they supposed to be identical, because you're cutting down one run by 30% and then you're adding another run by 30%. So,
right.
And then is that 40-minute run going to be the same pace that you planned on doing for the second hour run? So there needs to be more information here about the intensity. What's the focus of those runs to begin with?
Yeah, I mean, context matters.
Sure.
And I can't stress that enough. The context matters, and it's just, there's just so much more involved. But again, I think athletes who, really athletes who are self-coach, who they don't have that coach to lean on, will try to make up missed workouts or make up missed times. I know I've coached athletes who've done this without really telling me. I find out when I read their training log, if they miss like a 20-minute transition run after their Saturday bike, and then they try to make up, let's say they have a brick workout on Saturday and they have a day off on Sunday, but they miss their 20-minute run on Saturday after the bike. So then they run 20 minutes on Sunday. It's a completely different training stimulus to skip a 20-minute transition run off the bike when your legs are tired compared to the next day when you're fresh and you just do a 20-minute kind of almost recovery run. So they're just not the same. It's not the same purpose or intention.
So Wendy, follow up with your question and maybe some more details to put this into context of what your plan is there. This ties into this. This is from Julie, and she's training for an Ironman. And she says the longest run she's done so far and will probably end up doing is just 16 miles. And that'll be it before the race. She says, I guess I need to know what would be best for me. I've just not heard of anyone running that shortest distance before their full distance, and she's a little bit nervous. And you still have 10 more miles that you'll end up doing on race day, Julie, and I think you need to know what it feels like to do at least 20. And, you know, you're 16, so I'm curious too, why isn't she able to do, you know, four more? Is it based on where she is in the training program or what? What are your thoughts here?
So I really wanted to include this question because I personally coach Julie, and I think it's a really good question. My first Ironman back in 1997, granted I was young, and you can do, you know, training's a little bit differently from when you're young rather than, you know, mid-40s, mid-50s. My longest run was 16 miles. I had never run a marathon. So I was in her boat where my longest run ever of my life was 16 miles. I didn't run, hardly ran, if any, the last 8 weeks leading up to my first Ironman. So the fear and the anxiety of, well, what's going to happen after 16 miles? I have no idea. And that was my mindset. Just the, I have no idea what happens after 16 miles. Oh my gosh. And so the marathon of my first Ironman ended up being the best part of the race because I was so focused on pacing the bike and fueling on the bike that it made for a relatively easy first Ironman, first marathon Ironman. So the importance of, I think when you're thinking about an Ironman marathon, I can't stress enough the importance of pacing on the bike and your fueling on the bike is going to carry over into your run, I believe, more than the actual volume of run distance that you do before the race. And I also want to note, she's only really been focused on the Ironman for 12 weeks. So to progressively build her up, you know, her training around her life schedule and other commitments and other setbacks that she had, to me, that 16 miler was going to be it for her based on just so many other factors in life. But because she was worried, I ended up flip-flopping her schedule and I encouraged her, you know, if you want to go for 20, because 20 miles, like you said, because part of training is to get you mentally as well as physically confident, to go ahead and do it. So I just had to modify her training for that weekend, and she ended up doing the full 20 miles, but we did modify the pace and the, intensity of that 20 miler. And we incorporated some walking breaks, like you walk through aid stations. So she would have a faster recovery because she's now 2 weeks out. And so to do a 20 miler 2 weeks out from an Ironman is not something that I would personally do, or something that I would typically encourage any athlete that I'm coaching to do. But again, based on the circumstances, trying to fit the training around her life schedule and listening to her, what she needs, it ended up working out that she ended up getting her 20 mile in. Now, that's not a guarantee either that the marathon's going to go as planned, because you still have a 2 week taper. Like I said, there's so much that Ironman marathon is so relevant to the pacing and the fueling on the bike.
So as a coach, what's the rule of thumb when it comes to your running distance or actually time running before the actual race?
I like to build an athlete up to about 3 hours. Even if the athlete is a 15-minute miler, you know, in that 13 to 15-minute mile range where they're running and walking, maybe I'll go as much as 3.5 hours. I know some athletes I've coached in the past will have their longest be 3.5 hours because I'm incorporating walking breaks. So the total run volume is still only like between 240 and 3 hours, but because of the walking breaks, they're around that 330. Sometimes they just go longer by themselves, which is fine. They could have setbacks to going too long. But I really make sure before the race that they're really mindful of pacing on the bike and fueling on the bike, because ultimately I think that's going to impact the Ironman marathon more than doing a very, very long run within the training plan. I know a lot of other coaches that I follow that are pretty reputable will only schedule a 2.5 hour as an athlete's long run during Ironman training because their volume on the bike may be a little bit higher. I try to boost the volume on the bike more than I boost the marathon. And I also want to point out, this is her first one. She's not someone like you or I who have done Ironman before. This is her first one. And so I also stress the point of, we're going to learn a lot of what we did in training, and how after you finish the first one, we're going to learn about what worked, what didn't work, what we need to change for the next one.
Yeah, I've always thought of that thing in back of my head of a the fitter you are as a cyclist, the fresher you'll be on the run. So, that's kind of what it is. And you're also talking about making adjustments by increasing volume on the bike to get you fitter and keep you fresher as possible for the run if you haven't had a chance to do the miles. And it kind of like in the saddle, they always, you know, you say you can kind of do the full distance on the bike. You have to get used to being on the bike for 4 or 5 hours, sometimes 6 hours. So when you get out there, you're prepared mentally, like, oh, this is what it's going to feel like. But you can't really do a full marathon, or you don't want to really do a full marathon because of the recovery time in training.
Especially when you're 12 weeks out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, there's a lot, again, context is everything. Mm-hmm. This question, at least I know the context because I personally coach her, but the context of everything, of knowing she's had 12 weeks to train for this, knowing her setbacks, knowing her goals, knowing her life schedule, knowing how to best prepare her. And, you know, she made the comment of, you know, she wants to be as best prepared as she can be. Well, at this stage of the game and training, she is the best that she can prepare, because now we're about a week and a half out, and you know, there, you can't just cram in and make up missed training, especially at this time before an Ironman. Yeah. Then you just risk illness, injury, and just overtraining. It goes back to that saying that you'd rather race an Ironman 10% undertrained than 1% overtrained. Yeah. Matter of fact, I know that from experience.
Yeah. Well, making the transition from running to cycling, kind of going backwards in the race, but they kind of have some similarities in terms of cadence. This is from Derek. Derek writes, I feel pretty comfortable with my cadence in the 80s. I know you're supposed to be in the 90s or above, but I feel like my legs are spinning so fast that it's wearing me out and not going any faster anyway. I don't feel that push from the pedals when I'm in a gear required to spin at a high cadence that I'm told I'm supposed to be in. Should I just stick with what's comfortable, I like what he said, and ignore the 90% or 90 spin rule, 90 plus rule, or get stronger to be able to pedal faster in the proper gear?
Well, first of all, I don't think there's any rule that you need to be 90 RPMs or higher. Some athletes are very comfortable, like he's comfortable at 80. Some people are probably just as comfortable as he is at 90 or 100, or maybe 60 or 70. So I don't think there's any set rule. What I like to do is I like to mix up and have athletes do varying cadence drills where they do some pedaling at 50 to 60 RPMs, way under their normal comfort cadence, and then they do drills where they're over 90 to 100 RPMs, way above what their comfortable cadence is of, let's say, 80. Those faster, higher cadence is going to increase your heart rate a little bit more, increase your heart rate and breathing rate, whereas those lower cadences, you know, in that 55 to 65 range is going to be develop more muscular endurance. And on top of that is if you're going for a muscular endurance cadence, you also want to go for that muscular endurance intensity. So if you're following like power or heart rate, you're going to be in that upper zone 2, zone 3 type of intensity level, and then build up to those bigger gear workouts in a zone 4 intensity level. Same with the higher cadence. You want to start spinning higher cadence in a zone 2, zone 3, and then work your way up to be able to maintain that in a zone 4. So again, there's a lot of context. There's a lot of going on depending on what the purpose of the workout and what you're trying to do. Overall, I think if you're a new athlete, number one, do what's comfortable. Get through your season, keep a log of what's working, what's not working, and then make modifications and try something new. You know, take a one race where you're saying, okay, my goal for this race is going to try to spin at 90 the whole time. And then the next race, similar distance, say my goal of this race is to spin at 70 the whole time. And if you're using a metric like power, where you can really measure the exact workload, you can kind of compare what's most efficient, what's going to get you from point A to point B the fastest and most efficient.
Yeah, I noticed the resistance is key. And he was talking about, you know, I don't feel that push from the pedals when I'm in a gear that requires me to spin at a high cadence. And I do believe what you said, the key here is what he's feel comfortable doing. Now, that cadence is going to be hard to maintain when you have some elevation gain or loss, but to try to maintain some sort of resistance to stay in the zone that you're trying to stay in, the RPM zone. But I've always heard that, you know, that if you can stay in a 90, that is the most efficient physically RPMs when you're cycling, if you want to be the most efficient. But then you're going to also have to find where is that resistance point, and you have to condition your muscles to be able to push that at the high cadence. If you can push the same watts but at an 80 cadence, well, then whatever's comfortable for you.
Right, and it goes back to measuring your power, you know, not measuring power and actually looking at the actual number workload from a power meter is different than what you're feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, I could be pushing a big gear like 55, 65 RPMs, and I could be pushing 100 watts, and that's very low for me. But I feel the pedal. So because I feel the pedal, I feel like I'm doing some work. But then I start pushing it even more, and I start clicking up my gears to make it even harder to get to 200 watts, and it's a different feeling. It's a different power range. It's a different intensity. So, you know, I just think when you really, truly want to measure your workload and what's going on, and measuring how fast, if you took the same flat road, how fast are you going? What's your workload? What's your power at 90 RPMs compared to what your workload and power at 80 RPMs compared to what your workload and power at, you know, 60 RPMs? And then learn about it. Be very present and mindful about what's going on at different cadence ranges. And it's really good just to mix it up so you can get comfortable managing the terrain that you're on.
Next up, this is a swimming question, and this is a good one. It depends on who's making your workout for you, or if you're self-coached, or if you're following, you know, a How to Swim Faster in 30 Days program. This one's about rest intervals between your workouts. So someone says, hey, on the 2 minute mark, or on the 130s, well, obviously you're going to go and you're only going to rest until it's time to hit the 130 again. But if you're doing intervals and working on some speed work, is there a metric that you look at to let you know when it's time to push off again for your next 100 or 200?
Yes. And it goes back to the purpose of the workout. So depending on who I'm coaching and the experience of an athlete, the swimmer, their experience as a swimmer, I could be giving them a send off. So if I know that their threshold pace is 2 minutes per 100, I might prescribe a workout of 10 100s at T pace, threshold pace, on the 2:15 send off. So that means that they're going to get 15 seconds rest if they can hold 2 minutes. If the athlete's new and inexperienced and I'm still trying to get to know them, then I'm going to, instead of saying like a send off, I'm going to say rest 15 seconds between each 100, but try to hold that 2 minutes. Sometimes they're probably going to come in at 155. Sometimes they're probably going to come in at 205, but they're still going to take 15 seconds rest. Mm. Now, if I prescribe an endurance workout, I'm also telling them a specific zone, like a zone 1, zone 2, RPE 3 to 5 intensity level, where they're going to take, you know, 15 to 20 seconds rest, but they're not at threshold. If I'm prescribing a speed workout where they're going to be now in zone 4, RPE of 8, I may give them actually 30 seconds rest because they're going faster and a higher intensity. And the purpose of the workout is to maximize their intensity level. If I'm giving them a threshold workout where I want them to stay at that threshold heart rate, pace, power, RPE, I may give them maybe 10 seconds rest. It's not enough rest for them to recover, but it's enough rest for them to look at the clock, get a little bit of a breather, but still their heart rate's still going to be elevated. So during those 10 100s, it's going to be their overall average heart rate or speed is going to be about the same because they're taking less rest. So it just depends on whether it's an endurance technique, strength, tempo, or speed workout. And we actually, in one of our programs, Swimming Made Easy, with over 101 swim workouts, I discuss in detail what that what that all that means.
And is this more of a an elite swimmers workout where you would push them to go until they are not meeting that send-off time? Let's say you said, all right, I want you to go on the 145s until you can't go on the 145s anymore. Is that a prescribed workout?
Yeah. And that prescribed workout, if I know there's a chance, you know, I'll have an idea of when they're going to not be able to go on the 145 again. Mm-hmm. I would describe that's probably going to be more of a threshold type of workout. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe let's say 2100s on the 145, maybe the first 10, they're getting 15 seconds rest. The next five, maybe they're getting 5 seconds rest. Yeah. And then they struggle with numbers 15 to 20 where they're touch and go. They're going to be at a very high heart rate, threshold heart rate, most of that set.
And then is the workout over once you've, you know, you come back at 147, go up, I guess I'm done. If I can't make it anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do this a lot with the youth swimmers is, you know, because I've been coaching them. I know them. I know their paces. We will do challenges where I say, you know, you have to do however many you do until when you miss the send off, you're done. You go to a different lane and I'm going to give you a different set. I'm going to continue to focus on these swimmers who are still making the send off. We call them drop sets. It's pretty fun.
That sounds pretty competitive. And I can see it for younger swimmers too. Like I'm trying to think of different things in sports back in high school when we do workouts and it's basically who can last the longest. Let's say you're doing sprints in football. You're doing, you know, 5 yards, come back, 10 yards, come back. If you can't make the time, then you're done for the workout. But the tough guys are still running, and then you want to be part of those guys. Yeah, it's kind of a fun competitive thing to do for your swimmers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so again, treating a youth swimmer who's now an adult triathlete is different than an adult triathlete who's learning how to swim as an adult who didn't have that competitive experience as a youth.
I'm just now thinking about this. Let's say you have a goal pace for a race, and let's say it's an Ironman. So you're doing the 2.4 miles, and you want to hit your time pace. Would you go and do the workout until you can't hit your average pace? Let's say you want to average 150 for your Ironman swim. Would you go and do hundreds at a 150 pace until you can't do them anymore, and then maybe log those yards and go, okay, that's 4,000 yards. Didn't quite make, is it two and a half? 42, so what's it, 4,200 yards?
About 4,250-ish.
Let's say you stop at 4,000 yards and then you've missed your 150 send off. It's like, oh crap, I only made it there. Next time I go, I'm going to try and hold this pace until the next one. Does this make sense, what I'm trying to say here? I'm trying to think of a workout that you're looking at your goals. Let's say you're planning for your race, 70.3 or whatever it may be. You're going, okay, I want to average 149 to make my goal time of, you know, whatever I want to finish at, 110. Well, is there a way to do a workout to prepare your body for the 149 for the entire workout?
Yeah, I mean, what I would do is I would say do 42 100 yards, mm-hmm, or 43 100 yards, trying to hold 149, you know, maybe between 146 and 152, and take 20 seconds rest.
For the entire set.
For the entire set. So you're getting a little bit of rest, but the goal is to hit the target pace. Mm-hmm. And you want to take a little bit of rest and try to hit the target pace to gain some confidence. You don't want to hit 149 and then leave a second later. That's just a different workout. So if the purpose of the workout is to hit a goal pace, I like the set of 40-ish 100s with 20 seconds rest, trying to hit your goal pace. That's a common workout that I give, especially Ironman athletes. Now, I want to throw this in here. I had an athlete ask me a couple weeks ago. He said, how long do you think it'll take me to average 20 miles an hour for 56 miles with 3,000 feet of elevation gain? And my first response was, well, let's start with trying to average 20 miles an hour for 1 hour, mm-hmm, with 1,000 feet of elevation gain. You know, like, let's start small and try to build up to that. Because if you can't manage to average 20 miles an hour for 1 hour with 1,000 feet of elevation gain, then there's no way you're going to manage you know, 56 miles with 3,000 feet of elevation gain and average 20 miles an hour. So it goes back to always starting small. So I would have the, you know, going back to the swimming terms, let's see if you can manage 10 100s averaging 149, for our example. Mm-hmm. And then a couple weeks later, let's bump it up to 15 or 20 100s averaging 149. And then over the course of maybe a 12-week period, the goal is to go from here to here and be able to do 43 of them, you know, before their taper.
So I'm kind of guessing, kind of taking from what you're saying here, if you're doing your intervals, I mean, all these things are going to lead you up to bringing down your average. You wouldn't just go out and do 4,200 yards and see if it can stay under 149. Because I'm sure you can have some that are easier, some are harder. You're looking at your watch every time you do your flip turn and say, oh, is that 135? Oh, I had a 15-minute buffer. I can do the next, you know, 100, 15 seconds slower and still be within my pace.
I mean, that's just a different type of workout. Mm. But I think having the structured rest interval keeps you more focused. It keeps you more on target with looking at the clock between each 100. And maybe the rest interval is 5 or 10 seconds. Maybe the rest interval is just enough rest so you can look at your Garmin, look at your watch. And so the example you just pointed out, you're looking at the overall average. You're saying, okay, today, this 100, I did 140. So the next 100, I could do 2 minutes and still be at 150 average.
Yeah.
It's just a different type of workout.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that much of a spread, though. I would want an athlete to be within 5 seconds spread per 100 to nail that 149 average that we used as an example. It's an interesting thought, though. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm also thinking ahead for a race of mine in a year or so. Maybe this will be the last one here, and it has to do with cutoff times, about times, about not making your times. We're talking about intervals. Question from Kathy on Facebook. We have that T2 Endurance group, a closed group on Facebook, and she has a question, and you're training her for the 70.3?
I'm not training her. She actually reached out. She's in our T2 Endurance group, and she asked this question on Facebook Messenger.
Okay.
So she asked this question. I think she might be following one of our programs that we sell on Training Peaks, mm-hmm. maybe the beginner half Ironman or the couch to 70.3. We were just communicating back and forth.
So Kathy's feeling a little insecure. That's some of her words. She had some surgery recently, and that surgery is having an impact on, looks like, all three phases of her race. The run pace for her is not very good. It's 15 minutes, as she said. Her swim is better. She says she can do 3,000 meters in an hour, and she can ride up to 40 miles in 3 hours. But at this point, and she's preparing for a 70.3, and she thinks she's concerned and thinking about cutoff times, and she doesn't want a DNF. But she's put a lot of time, money into this race with reservations and so on, travel, and she still has actually only 8 weeks to go before this 70.3, and she's feeling discouraged with her current ability. So I have cutoff times for half Ironmans and full Ironmans to put it in perspective of what someone would have to at least hit so they don't DNF. What would you tell Kathy right now as she's psychologically a little bit overwhelmed?
Well, again, context is everything. Number one, she has 8 weeks left. That's still a lot of training time available. Number two, I had asked her during those 40 miles if it was a flat course or if there's elevation, because anytime you ride with elevation, you're going to be slower. And she had mentioned her elevation gain. And I know Indian Wells, the race that she mentioned she's training for, is flat. So I encouraged her, you know, her speed's going to be different in a race setting on a flatter course, which is good. And then, you know, why, I don't know why she had surgery. Because if you had surgery because you were injured, that's going to limit training as you move forward. You know, so I didn't get that detailed of what's going on. But I tried to encourage her to, it looks like the run is more the limiting factor. I tried to encourage her to come up with some sort of walk run ratio so she could build up her endurance with maybe, you know, a 3 minute run, 1 minute walk or something like that. Maybe it's a 1-to-1 ratio, and really take the next 8 weeks to build up her run walk endurance, as well as the brick workouts, and to increase her time on the bike. Because again, a 70.3 is very similar to an Ironman. How you pace the bike and how you fuel on the bike is really going to impact that half marathon.
So I'm trying to bring up some numbers here to see what she'd have to, what her pace would be for this. What's a 33,000 meters in an hour? I'm usually just doing yards, so I don't.
That's like a 2 minute.
Okay.
Per 100 pace.
So she's doing well there. Now just
to, and go ahead. You know, just another thing. You know, she's gonna make the swim cutoff no problem. She's probably gonna have, like, if she can do, you know, a 40 minute for a 2K swim. She's going to have, and the cutoff for the swim is usually an hour and 10 minutes. So she's going to have a buffer, and that buffer of making the swim cutoff by, you know, 20 to 30 minutes is going to be tacked onto her bike and her run buffer. Mm-hmm. So I think that's also something that's really important for her to know is, you know, if she can make the swim cutoff by 20 minutes and she can make the bike cutoff by, let's say, 20 minutes, that's giving her like an additional 40 minutes to make that run final finish cutoff.
Yeah, it's 110 for the swim and a half, which is a 3:19 pace. If you were to do that pace, you'd finish in an hour 10. And there, in this equation, you're allotted 10 minutes in transition one, which is plenty. Now, there's a 4 hour and 10 minute bike cutoff, but you add the 110 from the swim. So you have 5.5 hours once you get out of the water, or once you start the race, to finish the bike. And that gives you a 13.5 mile per hour pace. If you are following the 3:19 per 100 swim, then you only have to do 13.5 miles on the bike. But if you go faster, then you don't have to go as fast on the bike. And then they give you 10 more minutes in T2. And if you were at the max of all these cutoffs and made all the cutoffs, you still only have to do a 13-minute mile to finish the race before the 8.5-hour race time cutoff, which sounds very doable. I don't know what what part of her body was the surgery. So if it was a leg or shoulder, whatever it may be. But if she's doing what the times that she said, the discouragement should be pushed off the side and the confidence should fill up.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Definitely. You know, and again, I think it goes back to that run and knowing she can add up, she can bank some time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And almost everyone knows probably that 17 hours is the Ironman distance. And that too is a 2 hours and 20 minutes. And the same thing, 3:19 pace for your swim. And then just have, if you go to the end, then you have a 14 mile per hour bike average. It's going to be a long day on the bike. That's 8 hours. Looks like something like that. And then a 14.5 minute mile pace to finish under 17 hours. So that's everyone's coming into the race with different physical limitations or challenges or limiters, but those times are very doable. And that's why they say anything's possible with a full distance Ironman. If you do those times, yeah, you're going to finish the race. That's not that hard. If you put in the time prior to race day, your confidence should be there that you can do these minimum paces.
Yeah. And so she should definitely go for it.
Yeah.
Have an experience. Again, learn from what happens, learn from her previous training, learn the setback from the surgery. And even if she doesn't make that eight, if anyone doesn't make a cutoff, usually you're still allowed to finish. So you personally finished, you crossed the finish line. And unfortunately, Ironman is going to show you did not finish, but that doesn't mean anything. If you personally swim 1.2 miles, bike 56 miles, followed by a 13.1 mile run, and you cross the finish line, you finished a 70.3 distance triathlon.
And there you go. You know you've done it. So next time you try a little bit, you know, harder, or your fitness is better, you're not injured, you'll get under the time and you'll get your medal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, those topics there, I mean, I think we cover swim, bike, run, and cutoff times.
Yeah.
So where are we now? We're at we're middle October. I know you've got some specials out there for athletes of their off-season training programs. You want to run through a couple of those in case people haven't heard of them?
Yeah, so I've actually created a few videos. I just want to remind everyone, if they send us a run video for analysis, we will send them a 50% off code for one of our running programs, which is a 16-week out-of-season run program that works on technique, endurance, strength, and speed, and includes some strength training. It includes one swim and one bike workout per week, and it progresses with frequency, duration, and intensity. And then if you send us a swim video for analysis, we will send you a 50% off code to one of our programs, which we have another 16-week program, swim program, which is similar to the run details, as well as our How to Swim Faster in 30-Day program and our Swimming Made Easy program with over 101 workouts. You can get 50% off of those just for sending us a video for analysis. And then we also have a few bike programs, the 16-week out-of-season cycling program that it starts off with working on technique and then endurance, strength, and speed. And I also want to mention, before every program that we've ever done on Training Peaks, you and I have introduction videos, sometimes weekly, sometimes during each phase of training. And we've included so much content with videos, blogging, previous podcasts. So if you have a question about anything, we probably answered it in a video. But I also encourage anyone who purchases our programs, if they have any questions, they can contact me directly through email, and we can make sure they're doing it right and they understand what's going on.
All the information can be found at endurancehour.com or just by finding us on Facebook or joining us in the T2 Endurance Club Facebook group as well. It's easy to find us. I mean, it's not that hard. And there, you know, go to the YouTube channel. You'll see links below some of these videos as well. Well, sounds good. That'll wrap it up. Episode 333 of the Endurance Hour podcast. So for Wendy Mader, I'm Dave Erickson. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great week of training, or if you're racing, and most importantly, recovery. Hope to have you back here next time. Adios.